From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 23rd day of April 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. And a bit later in the program, Matt Bennett will be here from agmarket.net to discuss the cash grain situation. Oh, we'll talk about the weather forecast too with Mike Tenor from T-Storm Weather in Chicago. We'll do all of that right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. When a problem comes along, you must whip it before the crease sets out too long. You must whip it when something's going wrong. You must whip it. Whip it good. Whip Plus. Just sign up with FSA. By the way, props to my brother Tim for the Devo idea.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the numbers as they settled in Chicago. May corn, a penny and three quarters higher, $3.19 and a quarter. July at $3.26, up one and a quarter. December corn up two at $3.38 and three quarters. May beans, a four and a half higher, $8.39 and a quarter the settlement price. July at $8.46 and three quarters, up four and a quarter. And November contract at $8.48, a penny and a half higher. The bean meal up 40 cents and the bean oil up 4 cents. Wheat futures, hard red finished the nearby July contract, 4.5 cents lower, $4.93 and a quarter, and the soft red at $5.44 and three quarters for the July, up a penny for the day. Live cattle futures in Chicago, $3 lower at $89.95. Feeders up 95 cents at $119.42 and a half, and lean hogs up $3.75 at $50.97 and a half cents. Dan Zwicker is now here from Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Good afternoon to you, Dan. I'd like you to start with what you thought about the oil market earlier in the week.
Well, I'm not a big oil expert.
I just want to know what you think about trading below zero.
Well, I think that could have been avoided. And I'm really surprised that the CEM group or the CFTC didn't force liquidation of that expiring contract well in advance, because they do that in grains. I mean, in the grain complex, they know who's got the big positions, and they start making phone calls to the grain elevators if they're a big long or if they're a big short, whatever, and they start asking questions. What are your intentions? What are your intentions here? Are you going to accept deliveries? Are you going to deliver? You know, so they start asking questions, and then they basically start chasing the non-commercial out of that market. So the speculative crowd is basically told to get out, you know, get rolled to the next contract. So I am really surprised that they allowed that May contract in oil to have that big of open interest going into the last 2 days of expiration. I am that could have been totally avoided. The only thing that would tell me, and this is the conspiracy theorist, is that somebody was set up. The long was set up. Somebody, for some reason, didn't think things could trade below zero, I guess. And then there were speculators in there, to my understanding. I don't trade crude oil. I learned a long time ago never to trade New York markets. I learned a lesson in cotton 1 year back in the 90s that in order to get out of a position, it has to have, if you were long, you couldn't get out on an unchanged tick or a lower tick. You had to wait for an uptick to get out. So I got burnt trading New York commodities a long time ago. So I don't trade New York commodities. And I think Tuesday was a good example to stay away from New York markets. So nobody thought things could go below zero. But when you get into a market, into an expiration, and there was one person or one entity or one group, I'm not too sure, there's rumors, but I'm not going to say any rumors on the air. And they were the long, and I don't know what they were doing long. Either they got bad advice or what, but I don't think they knew the consequences of being long going into an expiring contract. And so when they wanted to get out, there was nobody underneath the market to buy their position as their long turned into a short. So there's a vacuum. We've seen this in ag commodities happen. Now, it's been a while. It might have been 15 years ago already. If you remember, we had a wheat contract on the last trading day. I think wheat was maybe trading, you know, around $4 or something like that. And on that last tick, it went to $7.50. And so when you get into the last couple days of an expiring contract, there's big vacuums in there. And that's exactly what happened. And of course, the guy that was short, he knew whoever this guy was long, or this company or entity or whoever it is. Like I said, I've heard some rumors. Well, that's all going to come out one of these days. They knew that they were long, so they weren't bound to let him out. So they just stayed short. And then when this company decided that they had to start liquidating, then everything fell up and everything started sliding, and away we went.
What do you think about the new bottom in the corn market?
I like it. Like I've been telling you for some time, I had a major low coming in April 15th, give or take 30 days. And then I've had some smaller intermediate lows. I had one yesterday and it turned up. And I think we could maybe struggle a little bit, maybe till the end of the month, until we decide what we're going to do with these basis contracts. But I've got this thing trending higher into the first week of June. And longer term, I've got it trending higher into the late summer, early fall, fall months. We'll take those when we get there. But my cyclical work, you know, I think back in December, I was telling you, I had a high coming in December 15th, give or take 30 days. So you kind of needed to do what you needed to do by the first of the year. And now we're at the point where we're coming off of that high, coming into a major low. And this is, I think, a low point for just about everything I look at: oil, stock market, corn, soybeans. Just about all commodities I look at kind of says that we're going to pull out of here and have a summer rally of some kind. Now, I can't tell you how much a rally that's going to be, but I do think that a lot of the downside price risk that's been generated by this pandemic, I think, is priced into the market. And I think the news will get better. And I also think China has got such a bad public relations problem that they may end up being hefty buyers of U.S. commodities in here to try to dress up their public relations position. And that might be that could be the driving force of a May rally. It also could be, you know, a planning issue, a weather issue. It could be several things, but that's one thing that wouldn't surprise me if China would become a very aggressive buyer of commodities to try to dress up their public relations front. And now, with all that said, if I would get that kind of rally in the market, I would tell farmers that would be an opportunity to somehow manage their downside risk. And there's multiple ways of doing that. And I guess I would let them determine which way they want to do that by talking, you know, to their grain buyer or to their broker or whoever they deal with in managing their grain. But I would be a manager of any kind of rally into the first week of June, because I don't see anything bullish coming out of the June stocks report and or acres report. Now, I guess everybody's going to think we're going to see bean acres come up a little bit and corn acres fall off a little bit, but we still got too many of each. So I would want to use a June high, whether it comes in the first week of June or, you know, the first half of June. And over the years, and even last year, if you would have sold a June high, the odds are pretty good that you sold a high of the year. Even last year, when everybody was worried about not getting the crop planted, if you would have sold your crop in middle June, you would have sold the high of the year. So that's a very good month to be a seller in. I guess that's the way I would look at it overall. And that's about all I can really share that's different than what everybody else talks about is my cyclical work would kind of indicate that we may have a shot to sell a seasonal rally in that June timeframe.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Okay, Todd.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Let's turn our attention to the weather forecast now. We're joined by Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us today.
Great being here, Todd.
Let's start in the Midwest. It's a little rainy here. What about the rest of the Corn Belt, and what are conditions like for planting?
Well, we basically have three systems to deal with. The first one is the one that's happening today. It's raining across pretty large sections of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. That system moves out through tonight, but then we focus on the next system, which moves through tomorrow and Saturday and produces a pretty significant rain event for pretty much the same areas plus Missouri. After that, we dry out for a day or two. Then the next system comes through and follows a very similar path with another rain for most of the Corn Belt on Tuesday and Wednesday. So we're looking for 1 to 2 inches of rain in most areas over the next week. And that's not ideal for planting, but many areas have missed out on significant rainfall over the last few weeks. So even with this rain coming up, it's still a lot better than where we were a year ago, where conditions were totally saturated and a rain like this would have easily have led to flooding.
Let's check some other areas in the Northern Hemisphere. It's been dry across a large part of Europe into Russia. What do you think problems are that are developing there?
Well, this is all basically centered on the winter wheat belt. That region extends from France and the United Kingdom eastward through Germany and Poland, and then more or less curves onto the south toward the Black Sea into parts of Ukraine, Russia, Bulgaria, Romania, and Hungary. That's pretty much your key winter wheat region of the world. And that entire area has been drier than normal over the last 30 to 45 days. And some of these areas have been extremely dry, with little to no rain having fallen. They average about 1 inch every 2 weeks at this time of the year. So we're starting to get some pretty significant deficits. And the key phases of development begin over the next 2 to 6 weeks. So we need to see some rain pretty soon. Now, there is some rain coming up for these different areas once we get into next week. So there could be some improvements in different areas, especially in parts of France, as well as the northern growing areas of Russia. But we need to see quite a bit of rain, and we need it to last, because the first rain is only going to make up for what's happened to this point, and then we need to keep on mounting up from there. Based on what we're seeing going forward, we can tell there are going to be a few different storm systems moving across. So that will be good for some of the producers there that would like to see some rain. The only uncertainty, though, regards exactly where each of these systems is going to move. It's very difficult to determine at this time. We're basically thinking that some areas are going to miss out, and that will leave some with decent rainfall over the next couple of weeks, but other areas being left drier than normal. The most likely area to stay fairly dry would be in southern Ukraine and southern Russia, nearest the Black Sea. And that's a key exporting region, and that's why the crop there is very important. So we really need to see some changes here over the next couple of weeks. Well, this is just going to become more and more of a story as we get into May.
So you talked about dry weather conditions there. And one of the places on the planet that should be dry at this time of the year, but is causing some problems for the second crop, corn, is in the southern part of Brazil. I know you've been monitoring it. Do you have some stats?
Well, I certainly do. And when you think about the corn crop in Brazil at this time of the year, you can basically divide it in half with a northern half and a southern half. The northern half has a distinct dry season and a distinct wet season. We're now moving away from the wet season and into the dry season. Typically, the dry season can begin anywhere from right about now and then going forward about a month. Typically, it'll begin right about then, and then you see no rain from late May through June, July, August, and the first half of September. We can see that the dry season is pretty much starting right now. There's very little rain on the way over the next couple of weeks. And then you start to really fight the climate once you get into May. And because of that, we can basically say with some confidence that little to no rain is coming up for the northern half of Brazil's corn. To the south, that southern half of the corn crop, they don't have a distinct dry season and wet season. It basically rains in some fashion year-round, kind of similar to what you have in Illinois. So the big problem there, though, is that it's not going to rain there either for at least 10 days. And that doesn't mark a start of the dry season. That marks a continuation of drought that began about 2 months ago. How we're going to get out of this whole situation remains to be seen, because some of this crop is certainly being affected at the wrong time of the year to be seeing a big dry spell. And of course, along with that, it'll be warmer than normal. So we'll just have to wait and see when some of the harvest reports start to roll out a few weeks from now. But basically, our data doesn't suggest that they've had a very good growing season.
Hey, thanks so much. You have a great week, and we'll talk with you again next Thursday.
Yeah, that sounds great. You have a great week, too.
Mike Tenuris with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Matt Bennett is now here. He is with AgMarket.net in Windsor, Illinois. Hey, good afternoon to you, Matt. I bet you're sidelined today because of the rainfall. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. We actually finished up beans other than river bottom ground that we typically don't want to plant, especially in front of a supposed 2-inch rain potentially. And so we've pretty much got the bean crop in the ground. And then as far as corn goes, I've got an easy day or two. So I'm really close to being done right now.
You know, my brothers I talked to earlier today, and they have finished beans. I suspect you're in the same boat as them, that you've never finished beans in April before, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I don't know that I ever have. You know, typically the way we always did it, of course, we started with corn, then we moved into beans. And things have certainly changed last few years. Our really early planted beans have done great. So we just decided to keep rolling, especially with cold soil temperatures. Most of the agronomists indicated that they felt a little more comfortable with pushing on bean acres than maybe corn. So that's just pretty much what we decided to do.
So let's talk a little bit about risk management, but I want to go through government available programs at the moment with you just to make sure everybody's
right
on the up and up. So last week, Sonny Perdue announced, and the president announced, what was coming out of the CARES Act. This was the $16 billion. I don't think anybody will have to sign up for that, at least that's what has come out of Washington so far, so that should just come. Then there is a program called WIP Plus. It opened on March the 23rd, so sign up still open, and there's no deadline on this. If you remember correctly, last summer, the guys that did not plant or had prevent plant acres got a top off of about 15%. That was through this program. They refunded it in December, and FSA is taking the applications now. Every county in the state of Illinois, I haven't checked the rest of the Midwest, is eligible. And if you had a loss on your crop insurance last year, you definitely need to go ahead and apply. And that loss, if I remember correctly, and you'll have to forgive me if I don't quite get this right, is the WIP Plus calculation minus whatever you got paid for crop insurance, and the difference would be what you might get paid. But everybody should probably go ahead and call FSA and make sure they're putting their application in for the WIP Plus program. That's a quick call. It's pretty simple. They need your RMA or your crop insurance yields for that one, which you probably already have. And then the final one, and this may or may not be in place at the time because you and I are talking at 12:37, but Congress should pass out of the House the PPP extension, with the which stands for Paycheck Protection Program. And those who are self-employed can apply for those loans. There is a forgiveness clause in it, and that program would pay about 15% of your income for last year. So you might want to check with your local bank or Farm Credit. All of them should have access to the SBA or the Small Business Administration information on that at this point. So that's part of the risk management that we need to talk about, I guess. The other part is what's happening in Chicago. How do you see the marketplace for corn and soybeans this week?
Well, you know, it's been a wild week, you know, seeing what happened with the crude oil market, no doubt, shook a lot of folks, made them wonder, you know, how far could we go as going into delivery. Going into delivery the last couple, three delivery months, we've seen the corn market especially struggle mightily. And so, you know, when we were already bordering on multi-year lows, down close to $3, it made you wonder exactly what was going on. Now we're here, we sit 15, 16 cents off the lows. Rumors today that China could purchase up to 20 million metric ton. Although, you know, I would encourage people to think through this a little bit. If they're really going to purchase 20 million metric ton of corn, I don't think they're going to try to release that information before they do so, which would, in essence, drive the market higher. Obviously, that's bullish information, 800 million bushels. But as far as soybeans go, I keep thinking soybeans are going to catch a bid in here. Soybean supply and demand balance sheet looks significantly better than corn. You know, but they're still struggling. I think part of the reason they're struggling is the way that the corn market's been struggling of late.
When you look out for old crop corn that's in storage over the next 2 months, maybe three, what do you think producers should do? And is there much of a difference between that which is in the bin and that which is in the elevator?
There's not near as much of a difference as what we thought there was going to be previously. You know, with the ethanol bids lackluster, for obvious reasons, it certainly has filtered out into basis levels throughout the countryside. So, you know, there's not probably going to be any sort of even regional issues with being able to get a hold of corn, given the ethanol situation. I'd say in the east is probably where it's going to be tightest, but it won't be near as tight as what we thought before. So, what's a producer do moving forward? I would still want to have protection of the downside if I'm holding on to the corn. I think that, you know, if we do break the low that we saw on Tuesday, it's not going to be a good situation. And this May report is not going to be a friendly one, in my opinion. So I still want to have some protection if I haven't sold the corn. If I do sell the corn, I want to re-own it. Man, I don't know. I'm okay with it. I just want to make sure that it's a limited risk situation and you're only going to put a few pennies towards it because I don't want to get make a bad sale worse.
For new crop, time is your friend, I suppose. How worried do you have to be about the ethanol industry, though, as it relates to the 97 million acres of corn that might be in the offing?
Well, yesterday we were 40 million behind the pace that we need just to reach the 5.05 or you know, wherever the USDA was at. I know that they backed way off. I think it was 5.050. But regardless, you know, if we do that for 10 weeks in a row, we got to trim another 400 million bushels off of corn usage for ethanol. Just so everyone understands, I mean, we're not done trimming that. So am I concerned? Absolutely. You know, 97 million acres. I don't know that we're going to get to 97, but let's say we're anywhere in the vicinity. You start looking at your supply and demand balance sheet, and it's not pretty. And so, yeah, I guess we have to be cautious as to make assumptions that a rally would be a, you know, a huge rally. And if we did get steady purchases over the next several weeks from the Chinese, I definitely want to be using this sort of any sort of you know, strength as a way to scale into a few more sales. It's just tough to assume that this market's going to be able to rally significantly.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it. Have a good week finishing up planting if you can.
Absolutely. Thanks, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett. He is with agmarket.net. Joined us here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. You have a good afternoon.